Third.
Well.
Somebody remind me to plug that in when we finish. Okay. Haver Ashlishi, the third well. Now each of these wells, of course, has a theme. Whereas the last one was speaking about the statements of Chazal, which seemed inherently surprising, difficult to understand. This one is focused, I think this is the shortest one, in fact, and it's focused specifically on drushes, on readings of the verses. A very important part of the study of Gemara and of the Midrashi Halacha is that they take verses in the Torah which have a certain specific simple reading, and they read in an additional layer of meaning called drash. And we say that there are different ways, levels upon which the Torah can be read. But when it comes to drash, sometimes it seems like almost anything goes. And you just shift around the commas a little bit and you'll be okay, right? Like somebody once said that you can turn lo sirtzach, don't kill, into lo, no, sirtzach, kill. Yeah, so you can do whatever you want if you play with it hard enough. So what he wants to do, what the Maharal wants to do here, is try to explain drushes, to explain that while drushes are not, he's not going to be putting forward anything that the drusha is the simple reading of the text, but the drusha, like any part of Torah, is again a layer of understanding of the text that's not from the moon, that's not completely removed from the reading that the pasuk is essentially meant to have. And while again it is certainly adding a layer of meaning, but what the Maharal is going to try to demonstrate by and large is, I think, two things. One, that the way the verse is written is indicating that there is to be another reading here, besides for the simple meaning, but the way the words are written, it's asking for it, it's asking you to go deeper, it's asking you to go beyond the simple reading. And then the second part of it, which is to show that reading is not completely removed from the simple expression of what the pasuk is saying. It is a suitable expansion upon what the pasuk itself is saying. Those are the goals of what he's going to say. Again, he's not going to be coming to say that every drasha, every interpretation made in the Gemara is the way it should be translated in your standard English translation of the Chumash. Absolutely not. There's a simple meaning, there's a pshat, and there's a drash. There's a simple meaning, and then there's a deeper meaning. However, that deeper meaning is not just, do whatever you want and have a good time. It is something which is very much which the verse is asking you to say, and which is inherent in there. And it's important to know this, that, in there, parenthetically, the Maharal takes issue, right? One of the asides which he has in this Be'er is with people who practice darshanus, right? Homiletics, right? He says people think, you can go and you give a homily about the Torah, and look, you see what Chazal do. They take the verse and they just, they play with it and they do with it what they want. So therefore they'll also use it as a point of departure. And Maharal says, Maharal was very much against that. He practiced drush, right? Very, very much. He practiced, these, what we would call, these homilies. However, the Maharal said each time that the idea is that you are trying to understand another layer of what the Torah itself actually is trying to indicate, trying to mean. To use it simply as a basis for expressions and for ideas that are not coming to say what the Torah itself is meaning is not suited with what Chazal called drash. Chazal called drash was a level of serious extraction from the pasuk of that which was really part of the deeper conveyance of meaning. of what the Torah was trying to teach, and therefore it has to have a claim, a hold on the truth. Now it should be noted that the Ramban writes in one of his places, actually it's in a polemic which he had with Pablo Cristiani of the Vikuach, when there were arguments between the Jews and the Christians, and the Jews who had become Christians. He writes about Drash that sometimes it was just Chazal wanted to convey a message and they used a package in order to be able, a package from the Torah to convey the message, even though they didn't understand it as the specific meaning of the text. But the Maral was very, very much not subscribing to that, and that's what he's going to try to convey to us here about how when Chazal derives something from a pasuk, even as it might initially appear somewhat a remote derivation, but it is not at all the case, and it is very, very real and very, very connected. So let us, as he says, I cannot possibly bring you every example of this and learn it through. However, we can bring a few examples, a few illustrations, and start from there. And let's begin with the first illustration which he uses, which is from a very interesting drasha, which certainly seems to be taking the pasuk beyond its simple meaning, very, very much so. In Parshas Ki Tsetse, which we will read in Yemei Hashem 3 weeks, Perek Chav Gimel Pasuk Yud, chapter 23, verse 10, Dvarim. Ki Tsetse Machane Alevecha V'Nishmarta Mikol Davar Ra. When you go out to encamp against your enemy, you create the camp of battle. So you must be careful to avoid any davar ra, any negative thing. A person who is impure from a seminal discharge from their body should be removed from the camp. He goes to the mikveh and he can return to the camp in the evening. Right? You understand the kind of an army camp which the Jewish people were having here to create. Right? Not usually army, the picture of the army is who knows what, what goes on, what would be the nature of how soldiers would conduct themselves. But here the person couldn't even be part of the camp because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is traveling with them. We see our soldiers as needing the Rabbona Shalom to be with them, having the Rabbona Shalom with them, and therefore a very high level of Tara, a very high level of purity is maintained. So that's one din which it says. And then it says as follows, and you should have an area outside of the camp where you go, and you should have, this is the 5 words that the Maral is going to be focusing on, but we will translate it literally. A yaseid is a peg. Tielacha, you should have. Al azeinecha, Rashi translates as with all your other tools. Right? You have lots of tools. You should also have this little peg. Now the peg really, as we're going to see, is something of like a little shovel. A tiny little scooping shovel. When you find that area outside the camp where you will relieve yourself, so then you will use this shovel to then cover it up. And the verse closes and says, because Hashem travels with your camp to save you and to deliver your enemies into your hands, and your camp should be kodesh, should be sacred, and no ervas dover, nothing that should be hidden should be seen there, lest Hashem turn away and not join you. Okay, this is it. This is the way the Jews wage war. Jews wage war with holiness, with purity, with a cleanliness of the kind that welcomes Hashem. We learn from these halachas about where you're allowed to daven, right? In other words, we learn where you're allowed to daven by the standards which an army base was able, had to keep. You learn from here, you can't daven in the presence of bodily waste. You can't daven when flesh which is supposed to be covered is exposed. We learn where you daven from the army base, from the rules of the army base. Such a very, very instructive thing, and I think very, very real for us now at this point, at this point in time. And it's a very significant thing. There's one fast day in the Jewish calendar of the post, besides Yom Kippur, which is not to commemorate a tragedy, but in fact the opposite. And that's Tanis Esther, right? All the other fasts, the 10th of Tevis, the 17th of Tammuz, the 9th of Av, the fast of Gedalia, they all commemorate tragedies. There's the fast of Esther, Tanis Esther, which we fast right before Purim. Right? Why? Because it's the day of prayer. And it shows, it says, we prayed to Hashem and Hashem responded to us with the miracle of Purim. Why do we have it on the 13th? Right, when the Jewish people prayed was months before. Remember when Esther told them to gather? That was Pesach. It was a year, almost a full year before the war was supposed to happen. So some say, yeah, but you're going to fast Pesach for what happened Purim. It's more of a cause effect. You do it Erev Purim and then you fast. But others say, Gaonim, that the idea is because the 13th, remember, was the day that they fought. The 13th of Adar. The 13th of Adar was the day that they fought. It was the day when the Jews were supposed to be open season. And then the decree was given that they could fight back. That was the day they fought. The 14th, what we celebrate as Purim, is the day after, when they rested. So say the Rishonim, what did they do when they fought, when they waged a war? They were fasting, they were davening. It's unbelievable, right? We would say, you have energy drinks, right? Protein bars, right? You may make sure you're well rested for the fight and everything is going on. They fasted and they prayed because Hashem goes with your machane. That's what it is. And when you see these images of the soldiers davening, with the holding their hands over their ears because of the artillery rounds, and focusing on their tefillah, this is it, and this is the participation which we can do from where we are. We have to have tzaddikim on the battlefield. This is always my concern. There's such a thing that the Jewish people are supposed to have Torah scholars, and Torah scholars aren't supposed to be drafted. Right, from Avraham Avinu's time, they're supposed to be dedicated to Torah. They're supposed to be fighting Torah, but there's also another rule, which is that the armies of the Jewish people are supposed to be tzaddikim. Right, so you're supposed to have Torah scholars who are sacred. They don't fight, and then you're supposed to have righteous people who aren't necessarily dedicated as full-time Torah scholars who are supposed to be fighting the battles. We have to worry about both. We don't have to worry, make everybody a Torah scholar and then leave it that there shouldn't be righteous people fighting the battles. We have to worry about both. This is Kisei Temachet. Okay, now, let's go, however, now. So this is what it's talking about. This is the simple meaning of the Pasuk. And into this jumps the Gemara in Ksubis. And the Gemara in Ksubis takes this verse, a phrase within this paragraph, Yosei Ki Lecha La'Zeinecha, and it learns a whole new thing. A whole new thing, which is in itself fascinating, interesting sounding kind of a thing that certainly doesn't seem to have anything to do with what this parsha is teaching at first glance. And listen to what it is. Darash Bar Kappora. Bar Kappora taught, Maydichsiv Yosei Tielecha Al Azeinecha. What does the pasuk mean when it says you should have a peg? Al azeinecha, on your, again, for the way Rashi translates it, it means generally azeinecha is your klei zayin, your other tools and instruments. Al tikre azeinecha, don't read it as azeinecha, ela al oznecha. There's another word which is spelled with the same letters, and that is your ear. You should have a peg on your ear. If a person hears something or is about to hear something that is inappropriate, he should take his finger, which is shaped like a peg, and stick it in his ear. Block your ears. And that's what Rabbi Lazar said. Why are the fingers of man shaped like pegs? My taima, says the Gemara. What's the reason? In other words, what the Gemara wants to know is, what's the question? Is the question why you have five different fingers on the hand? called chada v'chada l'milsa avida. That's not a question. We know each one has a specific function. And the Gemara goes on to bring zuzeres, zu kmitza, zu amma, zu etzba, zu gaidel. Right? Each one, if you would work in the Beis HaMikdash, each finger would have a periodic function. The chosh and the breastplate was a zeres. Orka v'zeres rachba. It was this long. This is the mida of the zeres. This finger is called the zeres in Hebrew. Right? It went from the full span of the fingers. That's a measurement. It was this long and this wide, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. This is the kmitza. When they would take a meal offering, so what would they do? They would put their hand in the flour and they would scoop it up, starting with this finger, the third, whatever, the someone?
Ring,
what
ring finger.
The ring finger, right? And this one is the amma, right? You would measure the Beis HaMikdash, so you would use an amma. An amma is a cubit. It goes from here till the tippy top of your top finger, the amma. This one is the etzba. When the Kohen would take from the blood and place it with his finger on the corner of the mizbeach, he used this one. And the godel, the thumbs, had a function. Remember, the levim, the mitzoroim, they would place blood on their, on the occasional thing, they would place blood on their thumbs. Says the Gemara, so each finger had a function. So don't ask me why there are five fingers. Rather, says the Gemara, what the question is, elamata meshupais ki yaseidus. The question is on the specific shaping of it. Why is it shaped this way? So the answer is, sheimishma adam davar sheinei hagel niniach etzbais abasnav. It's a perfect fit. Tana debei Rabbi Shmuel, and the base medrash of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught, mipnei ma oizan kula kasha v'al yoracha. He says, look at the ear. It's such a strange construction. The whole ear is hard, right? It is cartilage. And then you have this nice little soft earlobe at the bottom. How is it that the Rabbonu Shel Olam, that God constructed the person's ear, that it should be the way, it should all be hard, and if you bend it, it's very, very unnatural and uncomfortable, and this thing, it's a nice little flippy-floppy kind of a thing. Says the Gemara, Shimishma Adam Dover Sheinei Hagun Yaakov Al Yilaseicha. Says the Gemara, fold it right in there. Notice how that fits? See that? Perfect. Right in there. Just fold it right in. Use the finger and fold the lobe into the ear. It helps, when you go like this, hear no evil, see no evil. Just a little fold over there and it's that much more effective. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. So that's what the Maral has set himself his duty now to explain. What is going on over here? What's being said? And my gosh, where does it come from, that verse? What kind of a drush is that? Okay, very good. So the finger is like a peg, and aznecha, aznecha, ear, it sounds similar. But come on, where are we coming from? Where are we headed in interpreting this? So the question we got, right? Okay.
One imply the physical and the other the spiritual?
What do you mean?
There is defecation there, there's things. And Oznecho would mean spiritually you should be Kodesh as well.
Okay. Let's see what he's going to do.
I'm dangerous when it comes to food share,
Yeah, I understand. Right. Okay. The Maral, by the way, just parenthetically, just to demonstrate that even greatly accomplished rabbis have a sense of humor. The Maral says that this whole Gemara just kolze einay nichnas lo adam lo aznay. Have a hard time with this Talmudic passage entering any person's ear. He says it's just like, look, what's being said over here. Says when you start looking at their words, you see that everything they say is with great wisdom. Vizeh. Okay, and I'm going to, as usual, we'll read a few selections inside and then build around. Ki ha'ozen hu mekabel. The ear is 100% a receiver. Right? The ear does not transmit. You don't send anything from your ear. You receive completely in your ear. Right? Many times we translate Shmia as, and they accepted it. right? Yehuda made a point, and his brothers listened to him, right? We even say that, we use that term in the English, right? They listened to him, meaning that they obeyed. There's a term of reception, of accepting there. Umipnei shehayoseid hu takua bedover shenichnas bei v'say semaysay, ksiv yoseiti lecha al azeinecha. He says, a peg, by definition, will go into a hole that is there to receive it. Right? That's when you speak about a peg, right? It has to go. Sometimes it has to create the hole, right, as it goes in. But in the end, it will be held, ensconced in a something that is there, just open to receive it, to be able to contain it. And so, this is sort of step one in the Maharal. Ozen, the ear, is a receptacle. It's a receptacle of sound waves, a receptacle of words, of thoughts, of ideas. Right? They all go into the ear. And the ozen, therefore, can be a word which is generally used to describe an opening that is there, waiting, a gaping opening, waiting to accept, waiting to receive. So now Maharal goes a little bit, okay, we have to do a little bit more nuance in the section. So he says, okay, and it says, the pasuk could have just said, V'yaseid tiyalcha. Right? You should have a peg, and when you go out there, right, so you do what you have to do, so then you dig up and you cover up. Why does it say you should have a peg al azeinecha? Right? You should have a peg, the way Rashi translates, besides for all your other tools. I mean, like, why does the pasuk have to say that? Why doesn't the pasuk just say, just have a shovel? If I say, you know, right, when you buy something and you have to put it together, right? So it says, okay, you know, you should make sure you should have a Phillips screwdriver and a socket wrench, besides for all of your other tools. Yeah, you don't need your other tools for this. All you need, this is what it tells you, you need to have for this. Who cares that that this fellow there in the camp has a power drill, right? You know, like all real men, right? So he all you need, what do I need for this? For this I need this peg. So tell me I need to have a peg. What is al azeinecha? So he says, el shabola lamed, and the Maharal seems to, I must note this, and it's he seems to translate the pasuk differently than Rashi. And Rabbi Hartman in his notes brings the translation which we have as well of others, where they understand that azeinecha was not besides for your other tools, but it actually was like a tool belt. Azeinecha was a tool belt, and the idea was there would be a peg that you would be able to stick into the belt. The belt had holes, had places, and you should have one in your tool belt. In other words, because look, you're walking around and you're going to have these occasional needs, they're not always scheduled, so you should have one that you keep with you. That would be the idea. So v'yaseiti elecha al azeinecha. One could of course also translate the same thing when we say azeinecha, if it's your arms, right? So the person, the soldier, is out there in battle, he has all of these weapons, and besides for the weapons, he should also make sure he has this very practical personal tool, right? But he's understanding it. Al azeinecha means that it's a peg that will go onto and into azeinecha, into this belt. So he says, why does the pasuk have to express that too? Again, just say to have this peg and, you know, take it with you. El shabola lamedcha hitzorech adam stima al hamekabel. It's saying that when you have this hole, you have to have something to fill it. Right? Gaping holes need something that's going to be able to cover them up. V'yaseiti elecha al azeinecha. And the idea, therefore, is saying that, again, when you have something that's open, that's there to receive, you need to have something which is there to be able to cover it up. And he seems to interpret in this verse that the idea is that when you go and you're going to have this hole in which the person is going to take care of their personal needs, but they have to have this yosei, this peg, that whether the peg itself will fill it, or whether the peg will help you to be able to fill the hole properly and cover it up, but that's the idea. We don't leave these things just open, hefker, just gaping there. That's what the Parsha is telling you to a certain degree. Don't leave these things just lying out in the open, these things which are just there to receive. So says the Maral, that's what this Parsha is talking about. Yeah, the context in doing so is that speaking about Hashem traveling in your camp, and you don't want to leave this particularly unclean and impure item exposed. You want this to be covered up. But the way the Parsha is expressing it is, you have the hole, you need to have the peg. You need to have the cover. You need to be ready to cover it up. And the verse is choosing a specific term, a term, azenecha, otherwise known again or similar to aznecha, to your ear. And the ear, in a sense, in that sense, is the classic hole, which just draws into it all of these words and all of these things that are heard all around. And so if the Torah is telling you in general terms, you know, you got a hole, you got to fill it. So then it's telling you also, by the way, the ear is a hole, and you got to be able to fill that one too. That is not a complete departure from the text. You understand what the Maral is doing? Of course, telling you that you have to cover your ears is not a halacha in war. Right? It's not what the Parsha over here is talking about, which is keeping the integrity of the camp of the warriors by making sure that the clean things are, that what all that is seen is clean, you know, that is halacha in the war, and having your ears covered is not a halacha in the war. However, in the way the Torah is teaching it, what the Torah is telling you is, look, you're going to have this gaping hole, cover it, fill it, because that's what it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to leave these things gaping open and out there. And, right, in context, the Torah says, I'm telling you to this thing as a general thing, aznecha, aznecha, aznecha. It's hinting you to say that this idea of not leaving gaping holes is true, even in a general context, even in the personal context, even in the holes that we have in our heads. So, that's already the, you understand what he's doing? Again, it's drash. It's drash. But it's not from the moon. It's not just taking a word, bending it out of shape, taking a concept which doesn't even begin to be spoken about here, and suddenly, wow, boom, we created something where nothing existed before. The verse is already speaking in this general direction. Very much generally, it's not speaking about this specific manifestation. It's speaking about its own specific rule, its own specific law. And it is teaching you, however, when it's doing it, it's phrasing and presenting the general idea, you know, you should have things covered up. And by its language, by its chosen language, it's teaching it to you as something that, you know, I want you to identify this and extrapolate from this and use it elsewhere. Okay, so that's drash. That's the drash. The Maral really, however, is just beginning. Because now, while we've explained that the verse is not completely disconnected, right, from this, but now let's explain what the Gemara is saying. Okay, so the verse is telling you you have to be able to cover up your ears. But then, you know, what is it again? You know, like to us, right, we see this, we will see this eternally, I think. I have a feeling even after this shiur as a very childish thing. Right? You know, every see somebody blocking their ears, you say, you know, have you grown up yet? You know, it's like what babies do, right? So what does it mean? And the Maral, of course, as well, is not going to be satisfied until he explains the two stages of the Gemara, that you have the fingers in the ears, and then the, you know, the eisen, the flesh of the ear itself in the ears. So the Maral now takes a step back to talk about this phenomenon. And he says like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem created man b'tzelem Elokim, in the divine image. So whereas we understand that in general the creations of Hashem are made pretty darn well, but when Hashem creates something and he says, this is created in my image, which of course the Maharal as a mystic was not going to be satisfied to say that it's going to be simply just referring to the soul, to the intelligence, to the power of free choice, to whatever else, but there's going to be something in the totality of man, body and soul, that represents Tzelem Elokim, the divine image, however you understand how that exists by God. but certainly somebody who's going to be representing the divine image. So much so that we say, well, you can't let a person hang overnight. You know, even a person who gets the death penalty and has to be hung afterwards, you can't let him hang overnight because he's in God's image, right? And that's the body. All you're seeing hanging there is the body, right? So he says there, we would expect an even more complete perfection, if there's such a way, if there's a way to say that. That we should see real perfection within man. Now the problem is like this. Ein safek bedavar, says the Maral, there's no question. Says, isn't it better when you have an opening that has the potential as well to be closed? Right? It's nice when you're able to close it. You know, I don't know about you know, I'm sure people have this way, but like we have a room in our house that is a great room to sit in and to talk to somebody, and a week doesn't go by when either my wife or myself would say, you know something, it would be a great thing if that room had a door. It would be great if it had a door. You know, it's nice that it's open in a certain day for many of its functions. It's nice that it's open, you know, then, you know, people can come in. But occasionally, you know, you would like to be able to have a private conversation without crawling into the crawl space. You know, you'd like be able to have a room where you could close the door and be able to do it. And most of the things, the openings which we have, we have a closer. Right? Our eyes have eyelids. Our mouths have lips. Right? Generally speaking, we have controlled openings within a human being. Right? They all have these things that they can be closed. However, the ear is just sitting there, open, wide open, all the time. And in fact, you know, there are physical consequences of that in terms of, you know, things which go into the ear and build up into the ear, which are not allowed to build up in the eye. Right? When you, every time you blink, right, you have an effect. You moisten your eyes and so on and so forth, and it does the maintenance, right? There are no Q-tips, right, for the eyes, right? You know, you for ears, it's a different story. It's wide open. It's there. There's no stema. There's no built-in closer. So what's going on? What's going on? Why did Hashem make the person that way? So, to that comes the Gemara and says, oh no, there is a closer. There's a closer. You just take the finger and it goes and it fits right in. But, that's still not enough. Because that closer is a step removed. The eyes, right, you have the eyelid right there in place to flip back on and flip off. Here, you're going to have to take your whole hand, you're going to go stick it over there. It doesn't seem, while the Gemara is describing, oh, look how Hashem shaped it perfectly so it would go, but it doesn't seem to be to be as convenient, as neat, as defined for this purpose. So says the Maral like this. Aval davar zehu. The reason for this is mivnei shehaoizen hu mishamesh hakabola bilvad kemoish yisbar lamala. It's because of this function which we said before. The ear is completely there as a receiver, completely to receive. Ushleimus hakabola ba'atzmei sheyeh pasuach lekabel, and a receiver in its fullest sense will be constantly receiving. Always there, open to receive. The lo shielo stima ba'atmo shel ozan shenivra lekabola, and there shouldn't be something which blocks it, because then it will be built in something that undermines the receiving quality of it. You don't want to have something that will be there so ready to disrupt the reception of the ozan, since the ozan is there as a receiver. Right? Blink. And you might miss it, right? Right. That's the expression which we say: blink, and you might miss it. What does that mean? It means that there, that those eyes there, that even that involuntary reflex that we close our eyes, and we won't be able to receive with the eyes anymore. The eyes, our sages view them not as not being complete receivers, right? And we know it, right? With a gaze that you give somebody, you can affect that person. You can give a loving gaze. You can give a burning, you know, condemnatory gaze. You don't just receive. You ever try pointing your ear at somebody and seeing what effect it has? Right? You know, it's the ears don't do anything. They just receive. They purely receive. And as pure receivers, always on. Inherently, always on. That's what the Maharal says. That's the seeing what Hashem's notion, his intention was within the Bria. I know this still sounds a little bit strange, and we're going to go on a little bit, and you'll see how the Maharal is going to make something here. Okay. So that's stage one. But he says, but the Tanabe Rabbi Shmuel wasn't happy. Tanabe Rabbi Shmuel was the one who spoke about the earlobes. And he says, you know, it's still bothering me. Because like we said, it's good that something should have a door. And to say that the body has something external in the hand that's going to be able to go and provide the door, that means that the ear itself has no controls on it at all. At all. That bothers me. That bothered the Tanna Debei Rabbi Shmuel. And so he wanted to build it a step closer. He says, yeah, you need your finger, right? You can't just go and, you know, right? You know, even people who know how to wiggle their ears cannot get this little piece to fold up, right, and fill the space without using the help of one of those pegs. But he says, to create the shleimus, the completion of the ear, it had to be that built into the ear was that potential to close it. However, again, because the ear is there purely to receive, it's something which requires a little bit of an external effort to make it happen. So that's the way it gets refined a little bit. Umeata hu b'shleimus legamrei, and the Maharal says, I'm skipping through his words, and now it's complete. Ki ozen shu meshamish lekabola ein roi shiyo bo stima. On the one hand, because it's a receiver, it should always be there open to receive. But on the other hand, where being always open and completely uncontrolled, there's a deficiency in that, there's a weakness in that, then you absolutely can't control anything. To that, we have that it requires, there is something of a closure, but it requires a little bit of outside help in order to be able to make it happen. It's like the door of a house. A door of a house, an opening rather of a house, an entrance of a house that has a door. And the door doesn't just remain closed. The door serves as a way to get in. And you take something, like a piece of wood, that will be able to hold the door in place so that it won't close. And the ear of a person, says the Maharal, is like the door of a house. And therefore, says the Maharal, who's going to guess? Ear door? When it comes to the Eved, when it comes to the Hebrew slave who wants to stay forever, what does he do? You take him to the door of the house and you bore a hole through his ear and into the door. The opening. Ki ha'ozen v'adelas shavim. Because the ear and the door have this commonality, and says the Maharal, I'm not going to discuss it at length at this point. But says the Maharal, see, look at this. So the Gemara has explained the body of a human being and how it's meant to be constructed, and you see as well that how it comes from the psukim. So these are the words of the Maharal here. Let us just try to explain it and understand it a little bit better, and to go on. And we were going to do it, what I like to really focus on is the allusion which he's made over here of Bo'oznai Uvadelis, in his ear and in the door, that we find by the Eved Ivri. We're all familiar with that Parsha. Right after the giving of the Torah, we start Parshas Mishpatim, and the first thing that we learn in Parshas Mishpatim is you buy an Eved Ivri. He works for you for 6 years. The seventh year he goes free. If the Eved says, I love it over here, so then right, the master will take him to the door and pierce his ear. Say Chazal, Rashi brings it. Why did he make a hole in the ear more than anything else? Why in the ear more than all of the other limbs of a person? Does it have to, so to speak, suffer the indignity here of being bored right, for the purpose of the avdus. Says the Gemara, Oizen Sheshama al Har Sinai, the ear which heard at Har Sinai, ki li v'nei Yisrael avodim, that the Jewish people are supposed to be my slaves, and it went instead and got an adon, got a master for itself, right? So that ear should be pierced. That ear should be bored. And that, of course, is a enigmatic kind of a statement, because the Maral asks elsewhere, and whenever a person does an avera, we should go, we should take him and make a hole in his ear, and say, you know, that ear that heard that you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that, and you're not supposed to do the other, right? And it went ahead and it did it. I should go ahead and be bored and be pierced. Why specifically over here? He leave in Israel avodim. So Maral explains it so on point, so beautifully, in a way that really, really just expresses and explains this theme which he has made. That the ozen, that the ear, in amongst all of the limbs of the body, is the one which serves purely to receive, and not at all to effect, to give. You can't do anything with your ear that will affect something else. It's all just listening. It's all just receiving from others. What is an eved? What is a servant, a slave? Okay, a slave does a lot of things. In fact, right? You would expect that he would be working very, very hard. He's an eved. He's a slave. However, his position, his posture, his personality is one which is completely, completely receiving. He's owned by his master. His master defines his life, his goals, his motivations, the way he's going to spend his time. The posture of the Eved, the posture of the servant, of the slave, is receiving. The most important tool that an Eved has, while he won't be able to do anything with his ear, but he won't even be able to have the beginnings of a relationship of an Eved without the ear. The ear is, okay, tell me what I'm supposed to do. Give me my instruction. I'm here to receive from you my entire definition of what I'm supposed to be. That's an Eved. Now, when we hear that, we understand the great tragedy of slavery. Because what you're doing is you're taking this person and you're saying, your aspirations, nothing. What you want to do, what's fulfilling for yourself, what your personality, your character, your interest, what you were made to do, we don't care about that. You are our slave. You're going to do what we're going to tell you to do. Which means that you, by being a slave, are losing your entire individual capacity and potentiality. And it's going to be negated to somebody else's, to your master, to what your master wants you to do. We heard at Har Sinai that when Hashem took us out of Egypt, we became His slaves. No self. Right? Hashem tells us exactly what we're supposed to do. He defines it completely. A tragedy comes the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos and tells us what we would instinctively know and understand, that Al Tikri, right, when Hashem gave the Jewish people the Torah there at Har Sinai, so the words of Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Beis Avodim, I am Hashem your God who took you out of Egypt from the house of slavery, and therefore you have become my slaves, they were Charus Al Haluchos. Those words were engraved on the Luchos. Interpret Chazal, okay, and this is for another time. That's what Charus, the same letters Charus, can read as Chayrus, as freedom. There is no free person like the person who has involved himself completely in Torah. What do you mean? Torah is Avodaihem. You are my servants, you are my slaves. But what is freedom? Freedom is that you are not going to be playing to somebody else's piper, to somebody else's tune, but you are going to be doing exactly that which fulfills yourself. And that's the charge which Hashem gives us. Torah means that we're supposed to completely accept God's mandate. No independence? Yeah, that's right. That is like you telling me telling you that when you go and you tell your child, you have got to go to school today, and you have got to go there to second grade, and you've got to learn your stuff, and it's a fantastic school, and it's a fantastic teacher, a fantastic class, and it's perfect for this child, but the child decides that they would like to, they'd rather stay home and, I don't know, you know, spend another 24 hours straight on their Game Boy, right? So you are going and you are taking away from that child their freedom. You're not. You are giving your child their freedom. You're giving their child the fulfillment of self. And while that sounds a little bit paternalistic, but I hope that each one of us with our second grade children are behaving a little bit paternalistic. We know better for them what is going to be their fulfillment and their realization. And what we all, of course, recognize and realize is that the Ribbono Shel Olam, that God in heaven who created us and created the entire world, also knows what is good for us. And when he tells us this is the Torah and through it you will achieve, that he will tell you L'tayv Lach, like we read in yesterday's Parsha, where Hashem says, what am I asking from you? Remember that verse? All Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu says, all Hashem is asking from you is to fear God, to love Him, to attach yourself to Him. Right? Right? So, you know, like, what does that mean? So the Ramban, right, everybody knows what Chazal say, you see, that the only thing which is up to man is fear of heaven. But says the Ramban, no, you know what the Pshat in the Pasuk is? Because what does it say after that whole list? Two words. L'tov lach, for your good. So in other words, what Hashem says is, it seems like I'm asking you a lot. But everything that I'm asking to you to do is not for me. It's for your benefit. It's what way you're going to be fulfilled. It's the way you're going to become something. L'tov lach. It's your greatest gift. So what's the big deal? Right? You're making it as if I'm burdening you. I'm not burdening you. I'm liberating you. I'm telling you exactly the road to happiness, the road to fulfillment, the road to success. So what? You know. So don't view it as a burden. So we're supposed to be the avodim to Hashem. And what happens is, we go, and instead, we decide to, instead of following God's path, which is going to be our path to our own personal fulfillment, we put in our way other people that will instead define what it is that we're doing, and what it is that we're supposed to do. And in the classic, extreme formulation is we sell ourselves as a slave to somebody. So then what are we doing? We are making it that what Hashem told us, we will not be able to follow. Right? Even if we'll be able to do the mitzvahs, but we won't be able to be receiving completely from Hashem, because we're going to be receiving from others. And I've mentioned to you, to some of you at least, right? The Meshech Chachma makes a comment where he points out and he says that there are a few people who are called Eved Hashem, the servants of Hashem. It's those people who never refer to anybody else as their master. Yehoshua referred to Moshe Rabbeinu as Adoni Moshe, as my master Moshe. He wasn't called the servant of Hashem. Because anybody who's going to be subservient to any other person is taken away from his subservience to Hashem. Says the Maharal, so what do? We take this person and we say, your Shmiya, your receiving from Hashem, is deficient. The ear, that perfect receiver, which was supposed to be there wide open to receive and receive and receive from Hashem, to accept your definition, this is where we are supposed to exercise complete subordination towards only one thing, one being, one entity, one power, and that's to the Ribbono Shel Olam. To the Ribbono Shel Olam, the ear is supposed to be wide open, always on. And in that sense, therefore, able to be closed off from other people. And this person went, and they put somebody else in their ear. Right? They accepted a different master, that they were going to receive direction from somebody else. The ear is deficient, and you will see it, because from here on in, it's going to have a hole in it. Excuse me for being maybe a little bit too trite and contemporary, but it seems to me always a very interesting thing that the sign of rebellion that you will see nowadays is by how many holes a person makes, right? Sometimes there just ain't enough space in the ear, right, to show how deficient the person's rebelliousness is. You know, so they got to make it in their forehead. You know, but whatever it is, you know, it seems, right? Right. It's not meant to be, right? It's, you know, again, neither here nor there. But the idea here, the mosatabo osnei vadeles, that's trying to show the deficiency of shmia, the deficiency of hearing that is there. And says the Maral, that's the idea, osnei vadeles, in the ear and in the door. The door is the entryway. Right, it's the entryway. You do it there in the entryway because you understand this is the entryway into the person, the koach hashmia, the power to hear, and there is where the rebelliousness of the person accepting it to somebody else begins. Now you know, of course, again without much imagination, that you know, right? We speak about people being slaves to fashion, or being slaves, you know, to the society's expectations. Right, I have to do this, I have to have this kind of a car, but otherwise who is everybody else going to think, you know, just living up to the standards of everybody else. You know, the Mesilas Yesharim writes something which I still haven't had a chance to do, but I felt should be like a plaque, like those things that you keep on your desk, you know, that are in front of your eyes all the time. But he says that the single greatest motivating factor in a person's life is this idea of covet, of honor. Because so much of what we do in our lives is just because of what other people would think. How much simpler our lives would be if we wouldn't be worried about what other people would think. How much simpler it would be. How much simpler it would be. Right? So we wouldn't, you know, our income we could slash it in half and get by if we didn't have to worry about what other people would think. And so the idea here of that ultimate freedom of the shmia, of being in there, that notion of being always on. And to a certain degree, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore, says the Maral, created the person with this gaping hole of the ear. He created with the gaping hole of the ear because the ear represents that koach of subordination, submission, which is to be used in a certain sense with discrimination. But relative to Hashem, the idea is it's supposed to be always on, and anywhere else undermines that shmia, undermines that listening. But of all the limbs in the person, that is the one. And that is a tool, that is a skill that we have to be able to have. To be able to have the tool of submission, of proper submission. On the other hand, again, in society we will come across much that we have to block out. We can't receive from everybody. So Hashem gave us as well the ability, and showed within the ability to nevertheless discriminate. But to a certain degree, it is that much more, a step further removed. So in closing, this is in a sense what the Maral is doing with the Parsha. The ear is this thing, you have to understand that because it's an opening, they're going to be, like the Parsha says, with these openings, you know, there's going to be a time to cover up. And there has to be the tool there that's going to be there to be able to cover up, to be able to use that, you know, that discrimination wisely. However, it is not, a little bit further removed because of the inherent function, because of the inherent function of the ear. I just want to mention that just in closing, something which the Maral doesn't mention, but I think perhaps may add to this appreciation, to this understanding. The Gemara says that Avraham, when he got the Bris Milah, his name was changed from Avram to Avraham. The numerical value, you know that in Hebrew each letter is also a number, and the numerical value of Avram was 243. Right, Aleph, Beis, 1 and 2 is 3, Resh is 200, and Mem is 40. 243. When you add the Hay, it makes it to 248. What's the significance of 248? So we view that a person has Remach Evorim, 248 limbs. Says Chazal, what was the idea? What was the idea that happened here? Says the Gemara, that until Avraham Avinu had a bris milah, so he was in control of 243 of his limbs. There were five that functioned to a certain degree involuntarily. To a certain degree they functioned involuntarily. And what were they? Two eyes, right? Which, you see it, it's there, right? Right, it's there. Now, yes, you can try to close your eyes, right? But sometimes it's too late, you saw it already. Two aznaim, two ears. Again, they're just there, they're just picking up the sound waves. And they're there and they're functioning. There's no on and off switch. It's not like a hand that you have to move it in order for it to be able to do something. A foot that you have to move it in order for it to be able to be happen. The default is that it's on and it's receiving. And the fifth, two eyes, two ears, and the Reish HaGvia, and the organ itself in which the bris took place. Which, of course, the active function would be something which Avraham Avinu had control of, just like everybody else. But elements of involuntary stimulation that Avraham Avinu did not have control of before the bris milah. When Avraham Avinu got the bris, and which was, in a sense, you know, Chazal described it in a sense as the branding of Avraham Avinu, right? A sign, right? You would make a sign of avdus, a sign of servitude, and the bris is at haboim imcha bevris chaysamcha. Right, the bris is the chosem, it's the signet, it's the imprint on the person, and it became in his body, in that he became the servant of Hashem. It wasn't just, okay, this reminder, you can't get away from it. But what it did was that it harmonized completely the physicality of Avram with Hashem, such that every limb of his was controlled. And his eyes didn't see that which was not to be seen. And his ears didn't hear that which was not to be heard. That was the level of harmony which was created with Avraham Avinu in the Bris Milah. That's the idea. The idea is that the person, right, in the notions of Bris Milah, which is taken in a sense in the most human place within the person, the idea is that what we're trying to say is that there is, Avraham Avinu is saying that there is no gap. I'm not a human being struggling to keep the service of Hashem, and therefore the involuntary things will still be going. I'll control myself as much as I can, but there's some things that I just can't control. No. The Bris Milah was to create harmony, completely including and incorporating the body within the service of Hashem. And then, the ears, which are so harmonious in terms of hearing the word of Hashem, wouldn't even need the lobes. Wouldn't even need the peg fingers in order to be able to close them. So one could perhaps wonder in this context like that. I mean, the eyes, you know, still have this thing, right? But the eyes, when they're open, again, they're open, they're always receiving. But there is perhaps a sense that the ears, right, that the barrier is a little bit further removed, because it's the second defense. The first defense is one which is impossible to describe by science, but this almost natural screening of the sound waves. You know, certain waves are just blocked, they just don't go in because of the complete shmia to Hashem that necessarily fills the sound waves, fills the auditory canal, and doesn't allow the other stuff to be able to come in. The one who's being constantly shomea will not be able to hear anything else. You know, perhaps another level that is there. But again, the fundamental notion of Maral, however, is this: that the shomea, nishma, naseh v'nishma, right? Nishma is that function of obedience, of receiving from Hashem, which is the eved, being the servant to Hashem. That completeness, which in a certain sense should have no limitation, should be always there. And therefore the more discriminate limitation of our Shmia comes from outside. Questions? That's very voluntary, huh?